Thanks so much, Mike. Morning, everyone. Can you give me a thumbs up just to show me you can hear me? Fantastic. Well, if you've got your Bibles, do you want to turn to the letter of 2 Corinthians? We're going to be kind of dipping in and out of chapter 11 and 12 this morning. What I would usually do is kind of take a passage and really, work through that and do a bit of a, to use a fancy word, expository preaching from that passage. I'm going to do something slightly different this morning. I'm just going to base what I want to share in and around 2 Corinthians 11 and 12, but we'll also be in a few other places as well. One of my favorite films growing up was The Truman Show. Has anybody seen The Truman Show? Give me a thumbs up. Yeah, well, if you haven't seen The Truman Show, I highly recommend you give it a watch. It's about a guy called Truman Burbank, played by Jim Carrey, who lives what he thinks is just an ordinary life. And yet the reality is very different. So unwittingly and unknown to him, he is star of the most popular TV show in the whole world. So everybody else around him is acting. They're pretending to be somebody else. And yet he is just going about his kind of everyday life. And so a few things begin to happen that make him begin to be suspicious about his reality. And he becomes kind of disillusioned with what seems to be the fakeness of his life, and yet he can't quite put his finger on why that is. And then over the course of the film, he kind of realizes, the truth of his situation, until right at the end he has this confrontation with the creator of this TV show, which is called The Truman Show. And he says to him, "Was nothing real?" And the creator says back to him, he says, "You were real, and that's what made you so good to watch." And there's something in that film about the power of authenticity, that actually the only person living a real life was the star of the show. He was the one who drew people's attention. There was something appealing as everybody watched this person living out his life in the context of everybody else pretending. And as Mike said this morning, we're going to be thinking about kind of what it means to be real. Now, I don't know how you feel when we talk about being real. I think probably for most of us, we would have a kind of nervousness, or a hesitation about what is it that you're kind of asking me to do here. Unless we're kind of an extravagant extrovert, the idea of kind of being real and bearing all isn't necessarily an appealing one. And yeah, I want to put it to you this morning that we are actually made by God for relationships where we are seen, relationships where we are known. If you go right back to the beginning of the Bible and think about Adam and Eve, they are described as being naked and without shame. So they're completely seen by one another. So this perfect relationship with God, but they also have this perfect relationship with one another without any barriers. And obviously, when they sin, and you see what happens, they hide from God, but they also cover up, don't they? They get fig leaves and they cover themselves up because they realize that they're naked. And so, what was this relationship of kind of complete access, completely being seen, suddenly when sin comes in, they cover themselves and they hide from one another. Now, for most of us, we may be not quite like deep down the idea of being known by people, but we want to control what it is that people know about us, So it's like, I'm fine for people to know me as long as I can show you the bits of my life that I want to show you, but not show you the bits that I don't. And it's that idea that really drives, the whole ethos behind social media, Facebook, Instagram. It's like, I want you to know me, but I want you to know the best parts of me. I want you to affirm me, so I'm gonna show you a controlled presentation. I'm gonna manage your perception of me down to the kind of nth degree. And that's the culture that we live in now. And the reason that we do that, the reason that we want to control what people see of us, is because if we're honest, we fear that if we are real, people will not accept us. We fear being rejected. And it's like, well, if I show you my true self and then you reject me, like, where do I go then? I'm gonna be just kind of bereft, and I'm going to feel exposed and vulnerable. And the Apostle Paul wrestled. He had a moment in his ministry where he had a bit of a dilemma. He was confronted with a situation where he had to decide whether he was going to be real or whether he was going to just show kind of the best parts of himself. And so if you look in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, we're going to start reading in a minute just from verse 21. But just to give you a little bit of context of what's happening here, Paul had a complicated relationship, I guess, would be a good way to put it, with the church in Corinth. So he established the church in Corinth, but then he visited them a while after he'd kind of set them up. And basically the church rebelled against it. So there were people who had come into the church who Paul later ironically describes as super apostles, but they were people who were presenting themselves in a very managed way, you know, and they were presenting themselves as very impressive, and they were criticizing Paul and saying, actually, this guy is really unimpressive. They were criticizing his kind of preaching. They were saying, oh, he's harsh in his letters and he's bold in his letters, but actually in person he's really unimpressive. And so the church kind of rebels against Paul, and so 2 Corinthians is part of his response to that. But it's almost like the church was saying to him, well, come on, Paul, show us your credentials. You know, we've got these so-called super apostles amongst us who are saying that they are, you know, the kind of bee's knees. And so why should we follow you? Why should we listen to you? And why should we not listen to them? And so Paul responding to that kind of criticism, accusation, question, has the opportunity to respond in the kind of Facebook, Instagram way. He has the opportunity to say, well, okay, well, you're asking me why you should follow me. You're asking me what my credentials are. Well, let me show you. Let me reel off all of my kind of credentials, all of my successes. And so when we start reading in verse 21 of 2 Corinthians chapter 11, we almost get the sense that he's starting to do that. So just read with me. He says, but what anyone else dares to boast of, I'm speaking as a fool, I also dare to boast of that. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they offspring of Abraham? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? Well, I'm a better one. So he starts, it looks like he's going to go, hey guys, I'm going to show you why you should listen to me. Here are all of my achievements. Here's all of my kind of credentials. But then we see in verse 23, he does something that is really quite extraordinary. Okay, so after having said, are they servants of Christ? I'm a better one. He then stops and he says, I'm talking like a madman. And then see what he says. He says, with far greater labors, far more imprisonments, with countless beatings and often near death, 5 times I received at the hands of the Jews the 40 lashes less one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I was adrift at sea. On frequent journeys, in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all of the churches. Now, in a literary sense, what Paul is doing here is what's called a boast. And this would have been something that like a warrior was to do after their achievements on the battlefield. So somebody kind of says to you, well, what are your credentials? What have you done? And the warrior would stand up and they would list all of the victories that they had. And the Corinthian church almost asking Paul that. They're saying, okay, well, boast to us. Show us what you've done. And so what Paul does is he completely turns it on his head. And rather than boasting in all of his achievements, all the churches he's set up, the revelations he's had, which he'll go on to talk about in chapter 12 a little bit, he does completely the opposite. He boasts in all of these difficulties, trials, and challenges that he's had. What he does is he models to us what it means to be real, okay? And so what I want to do this morning is I want to try to put before you a bit of vision for being an authentic people, being a real people, what that requires of us and what the benefits of that are to us. And this is really kind of part one. So what we're looking at is kind of being real, and what we're going to see on Wednesday is how we outwork that in the context of discipleship. So this one is very much kind of the vision section, and then Wednesday night will be the actual kind of how do we actually live this out. So I want us to look at 3 things this morning. We're going to look at, number one, being real means boasting in our weakness. Number two, being real builds deep relationships. And then number three, being real brings spiritual growth. Okay, give me a thumbs up if you're still with me. Fantastic. Okay, well, let's look at the first of those. And being real boasts in weakness. Being real, being authentic, requires something of us that most of us are not very comfortable doing, and that is being vulnerable or showing our weakness. We spend a lot of time, don't we, pretending to be okay. You know, in many of the conversations that we have, we're just presenting this front that we've got it all together. So we see one another and we say, oh, how are you doing? Yeah, I'm fine. You know, oh, how's work at the moment? Yeah, it's fine. Oh, how's your spiritual life? Yeah, yeah, it's fine. How are you doing in yourself, in your heart? Oh, yeah, no, I'm fine. You know, that's kind of our stock answer often. In fact, Miriam has kind of banned the word fine in our house because I'm as guilty as anybody of doing it. You know, she'll say to me, oh, how's your day been? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Oh, how's your meeting with so-and-so? Yeah, it's fine. She's like, stop saying it's fine. Like, that doesn't tell me anything. And yet so often that's kind of the language that we use, isn't it? We're spending a lot of time just pretending to be okay. And yet the reality is pretending to be okay is actually quite exhausting, and it is deeply unfulfilling in a relational level. And yet the Apostle Paul shows us a better way. So look at what he says in verse 30 of chapter 11 of 2 Corinthians. He says, if I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. So he's saying, you're asking me to show strength. But actually, if I'm going to tell you anything, I'm not going to tell you my list of achievements. I'm not going to say I'm fine. I'm going to boast in my weaknesses. So why does Paul do that? If we skip down to verse 6 of chapter 12, we get an insight. So Paul here at the beginning of chapter 12, he starts to talk about this revelation. He talks about himself in the third person, but he's talking about this revelation that he's had, this amazing revelation, being taken up into the third heaven. Jesus has said you can't, you know, say kind of what you've experienced to other people. But then he says this in verse 6. He says, I refrain from it. So that's from boasting or sharing in this revelation, so that no one may think more of me than he sees in me or hears from me. Okay, so Paul's saying, I'd rather boast in my weakness so you don't get the wrong idea about me. Now, we don't want people to get the wrong idea about us at all, but for completely the opposite reasons, right? So I don't want you to see me snapping at my kids because I don't want you to get the wrong idea and think I'm a bad dad. You know, I don't want you to see me arguing with my wife because I don't want you to think I'm a bad husband. You know, we don't want people to know that we're struggling at work because we want people to think that we're competent and able. We don't want people to know about our anxieties or the depression that we're struggling with because we want people to feel like we've got it together. So we spend a lot of time and energy not wanting people to get the wrong idea of us. And Paul didn't want people to get the wrong idea of him, but for completely the opposite reason. Not so that people would think less of him. Paul didn't want people to think more of him than was the truth. So he says, I refrain from it so that no one may think more of me than he sees in me or hears from me. So he's saying, I'm not going to talk to you about this great revelation I've had. I'm not going to talk to you about how Jesus has used me to plant all of these churches. I'm not going to talk to you about my apostolic authority because I don't want you guys to think, wow, Paul's amazing. I don't want you to think more of me than you see or hear. He's like, I want you to think less of me. I actually want you to think less of me. Paul wants the church to know the reality of who he is. He does want to manage their perception, but he doesn't want to present a wrong perception. He wants them to understand who he truly is. And so there are lots of other places where Paul is really kind of strikingly honest about kind of who he is and what he's experienced. So in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 8, he speaks about despairing of life itself. You know, that's kind of language that's like really like wrestling and battling with depression. I despaired of life itself. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 11, which is just after this, when he's speaking about the super apostles, he says, for I was not at all inferior to these super apostles, even though I am nothing. This is Paul speaking. He's like, I'm nothing. And then in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 15 to 16, he says, you know, this saying is trustworthy and full of acceptance, that Christ came to die for sinners, of whom I am the foremost. So much of what Paul's talking about is rather than trying to boast in his own achievements and get people to think that he's amazing, what he's saying in this verse in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, he's saying, I want you to think less of me. So why was that? What was behind that motivation for Paul? And I think the answer is he doesn't want people to think highly of him because he wants people to think highly of Christ. You see, when we boast in our weaknesses, when we're real about our weaknesses, what we do is we boast in the gospel. When we boast in our weaknesses, we make it very clear that we're not here because of our own righteousness, that we're not standing on our own foundation, that we're not part of church because of our own intellect or merit, but because of what Jesus has done for us. To boast in our weakness is to boast in the sufficiency of God's grace. And that's exactly what Paul goes on to say in verse 9 of chapter 12, famous verses, where after he'd asked the Lord to take away this thorn in the flesh that God has given him so that he doesn't become conceited because of the revelations. And Jesus says to him this, he says, no. And he says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Paul's saying, when I boast in my weakness, it's a testimony of the sufficiency of God's grace for me. You know, one of the things that I've found most tricky, and this shows you that I've not really found lockdown that tricky, but one of the things around this whole pandemic that I don't particularly like is the having to kind of wear a mask. You know, in the supermarket or in shops or any other context, because I find it really difficult to communicate with a mask. I find a mask, I can't really hear what people are saying. I find almost like it's like being gagged almost. You know, I struggle to kind of talk. I find masks incredibly restrictive when it comes to relationships. And yet the reality is a lot of us wear a metaphorical mask most of the time. And those kind of masks, when we're pretending to be something that we're not, restrict our ability to form deep relationships with one another. Being real requires us to take our masks off. Now, the reason that we wear these masks, the reason that we pretend to be okay, even if we're not, is because we're worried that if we, like I said, if we take off the mask, what if people won't accept me? But you know what? We don't need... don't need to worry about that for a couple of reasons. Firstly, each and every single one of us are in exactly the same boat, right? None of us are here because we stand on our own foundation. None of us are here because of our own righteousness. We're all sinners, saved scandalously and outrageously by God's grace. We're all the people who fell short of God's glory, and yet by his blood have access to the Father. You know, we're all struggling and battling and working out our salvation with fear and trembling. You know, we're all, if we're honest, we're all a bit messed up. You know, we're all, who are we trying to kid when we're trying to present as having it together? None of us have it together. All of us have struggles. All of us have questions. All of us have doubts. All of us suffer and give in sometimes to temptations. All of us are weak. So who are we trying to kid, right? Who are we trying to kid when we're trying to present? Are we trying to say, well, actually, I don't really need Jesus's grace, or I only needed a tiny bit of Jesus's grace? No, we need the 100% every day, every moment, the fullness of Jesus's grace, because none of us are here because of anything that we have done, but only because of what Jesus has done and who we now are in him. And that's the second, and I would say almost bigger reason that we can let go of our masks, is because our identity doesn't rest upon what other people think of us. Our identity doesn't rest upon whether other people accept us or not. Our identity rests in the fact that we have been accepted by God, that we have been accepted by Jesus. In Romans chapter 15, verse 7, Paul writes this. He says, therefore, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. The NIV translates it as, therefore, accept one another as Christ has accepted you for the glory of God. Guys, do you know this morning, deep in your heart, that you've been accepted by Jesus? That he calls you friend? You know, we use that language quite a lot, don't we? But how often do we stop to think about what that really means? Like how amazing that is. I just want to read a quote to you from a book called Growing Leaders. And he says this about the friendship of Jesus. He says, this friendship is extraordinary. We are not to be servants, but friends, because everything he has learned, that's Jesus, from his Father, he has made known to us. Those who think it is twee to call Jesus friend sometimes abuse the concept. Maybe they've misunderstood the nature of this friendship. This is not a casual acquaintance, nor is it even friendship on equal terms after years of growing close to someone. We can never be equal to Jesus. He is God. We are mortal human beings. He is the creator. We are the created. He is without sin. We are sinful. It is only when we have fully grasped just how other Jesus is that this truth makes its full impact. Despite the total inequality, despite our persistent rejection of the sovereignty of Christ, despite our ugly sin, he calls us friends. This isn't twee. This is awesome. It leaves us on our knees, humbled and grateful, and raises us to our feet, proud and strong. For if he has called us friend, whatever anyone else calls us is put in perspective. And at the heart of being real is that last bit. If Jesus has called you friend, we are free to be authentic before anybody else without fear of rejection, because who we are is not shaped by others' acceptance or rejection of us. Who we are is shaped by the fact that we are called friends of Jesus, friends of God. And when we grasp the fact that we are friends of God, it also frees us to accept other people, because we don't need to reject others or criticize others or compete to others to jostle for position, because our position is secure in Jesus. And so this leads us on to our second point, that being real helps us build deep relationships. You guys still with me? Give me a thumbs up. Okay. Now, we talked at the start about how deep down we all want relationship. We all want to be known, right? But we kind of want it without the risk of opening up, don't we? And yet the reality is that superficiality does not cultivate deep relationships. When we think again about Paul had deep relationships with his churches. You know, not always easy relationships, but deep and real relationships with his churches. And so how did Paul go about developing these relationships with his churches? Well, if you look with me in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 8, we get a little insight into how Paul did this. It says this: "So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us." So the way that Paul built relationship with the church in Thessalonica, and we can imagine with all the other churches as well, is that he didn't just share a message. He didn't just share teaching. He shared his very self. He was completely kind of all in with them when it came to relationships. And as we said before, when we looked at our DNA of loving others, we believe that we're called to be a community that lives not in castles, but in tents, okay? And that picture language speaks of access and speaks of proximity. And that's important because we grow when we are living in proximity to one another. And the reason that we do that is because when we're living in proximity to each other, relational proximity, it's much harder for us to hide. And when we're not hiding, that's where we allow other people to speak into our lives, and that's where we grow. We'll think about that a little bit more in a moment. Now, I had a very real example of this a few years ago. Miriam and I went on a caravan holiday with Matt and Helen Spockier, who are planting up in Sheppey. Many of you will know those guys. And also Ollie and Kirsty Knight. Ollie leads the worship team over in Canterbury. And there was one evening where, I can't even remember the details, but one evening where we all decided we were going to get Chinese. But because we all had young kids at the time, we were like, well, we'll all get one, but we'll have to eat it in our separate caravans because we can't just, you know, we can't leave the kids on their own. And so I don't even know why, but somehow Miriam and I managed to get into this big, like, Barney about, I think it was, I don't know if it was about the Chinese, it was something to do with the Chinese. Anyway, we had a heated discussion, shall we say. And so we're in our room. Obviously, we don't have heated discussions now. We're past that. But back then, in those immature days, you know, we had heated discussions every now and then. And so we're having this argument in the room of the caravan. And I, you know, probably said something overly dramatic and stormed out of the room, leaving Miriam in there. And as I walk out into the living area of the caravan, Ollie Knight is sitting in the living area of the caravan, looking incredibly awkward. Now, as you know, Ollie, he does an awkward expression better than anybody else. And Ollie, being Ollie, had thought it would be really funny just to come into our caravan and just kind of wait and kind of surprise us. And yet he'd found himself in this situation, overhearing our argument and with nowhere to go. And in that moment, I had nowhere to hide. It's like, I can't twist this into any other way. I just had to be real and be honest and be like, yeah, mate, we're having a big argument about the Chinese food. And, you know, so proximity didn't allow me to hide. But actually, you know, in a weird way, it brought Ollie and I closer because he had seen something real about my life. And I, in that moment, couldn't hide it. And so proximity helps us to grow. Let me ask you a question this morning. When it comes to being real with people, are you someone who likes to hide? I think the reality is probably all of us are at some point. You know, that temptation to hide away from others. Here's a few symptoms of what it means to hide. So let's just see if you're any of these, okay? So we know we like to hide when we keep our distance from people, you know, either physically or relationally. We know we like to hide when we never open up our home to allow anybody else to come and see how we really live. Or the thought of having other people come into our home fills us with kind of anxiety and fear because we think, well, I've got to get everything perfect for when they come in. We only share our successes with other people and not our failures. We never ask people to pray for us. We only come to church or small group when we're in a quote unquote good place. We think over and over again after we say something about what other people thought of what we said. Now, as I said, I reckon all of us tick some of those boxes some of the time. The temptation for us to hide is strong. And yet what I want to say to you is I don't believe that's God's heart for the church. The church is supposed to be different to that. In Acts chapter 2, it speaks of the fellowship of believers. Now, that word fellowship in Greek, koinonia, means close, intimate relationships. It speaks of participation. It speaks of contribution. It speaks of a close communal bond that is much more than just coming to a meeting or going to small group once a week. It speaks about being knitted together for a common purpose. Now, I'll be honest, building this kind of fellowship doesn't come easily. Yeah, building this kind of fellowship doesn't just happen. It requires us stepping out into it. And it's risky. You know, I want to be honest, it's risky. And when we do that, it feels risky because when we think about being real with other people, when we think about opening up and being vulnerable and showing our weakness, a lot of questions suddenly spin through our mind that make us kind of hesitant to do it. You know, will people accept me? Will people judge me? Will people think I'm weird or crazy? Will people reject me? And I also want to be honest that building these kind of deep relationships, actually, it can be a bit awkward at the beginning. You know, particularly if you are slightly more introverted like I am, the idea of kind of bearing your soul to somebody, it can feel quite awkward. It can feel quite awkward for the person sharing. It can feel quite awkward for the people hearing because we're just not used to living in that type of way, are we? And so somebody kind of shares in that way and we're all a little bit English, if we are English, and we're a little bit like, oh, I don't quite know, you know, where to look. But I want to encourage you with all of my heart that it is worth pressing through the awkward beginnings to get to that place of being real in deep relationships. And the reason that it's worth it is because when you start to open up to people, when you stop pretending, you realize you're not alone. You realize the things you struggle with are not specific to just you. You realize that actually everybody's struggling, or everybody's got doubts, or everybody's got questions, that you're not some kind of odd person who just doesn't quite get it. And actually, when you realize that, that's a great encouragement But it also makes you realize you don't need to hide anymore. Now, we'll add one slight caveat at this point, and that is that building authentic community, being real with one another, doesn't mean that you have to share everything with everybody at every opportunity. Okay, so what we want to try and build as a church is a culture where we are appropriately real and vulnerable. Wherever we are, that we're just authentic. I'm the same in any kind of context. I'm the same at church, I'm the same at work, I'm the same at home. But there's also a place for a deep level of vulnerability, a really deep level of honesty that is best outworked in a few really deep, accountable, trustworthy relationships for your own protection and for the protection of others. Because the purpose of being real is to be changed, not to be noticed. The purpose of being real is to be changed, not to be noticed. And there is a danger that some people can fall into that kind of oversharing. And the reason they're oversharing is because they're looking for validation from other people rather than looking ultimately to God. So we want to share out of that place of our security in God. And we want to be wise about what we're sharing and when. Having said that, I think it's an important caveat, but having said that, I think most of us are the other end of the spectrum. From that, so we probably don't need to worry about oversharing, in most contexts. But for some people, maybe that's something they just need to be aware of. Okay, coming into the third point then, being real brings spiritual growth. So obviously, when it comes to our relationship with God, there is a significant part of it that is outworked personally. We grow through our personal discipline, through the dynamic of our personal relationship with Jesus. But also, a lot of it is outworked in the context of community, and our character is formed in the context of community, and we grow in the context of community. So, what I want to do just to finish is just share three quick ways with you that being real in the context of deep relationships helps us to grow spiritually. Okay, so the first of these is that it helps us to confess and confront our sin. Okay, so sin loves to hide in the darkness. Sin has a party when somebody is hiding away. And the reason that we don't confess our sin to one another is because of that fear we talked about right at the start. We're fearful of being ashamed in front of others, or fearful of being judged or rejected by people. And so sin often, the fear of those things means that we keep sin hidden away. And yet Proverbs 28, verse 13 says this about confession. Let's see if I can find it. It says this, it says, "Whoever conceals his transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses them and forsakes them will obtain mercy." So when we're real about our sin, when we confess our sin, we bring it into the light and we receive mercy. And the reason that it's being real in the context of deep relationships helps us to do this is because not only do we tend to cover up to others, we also can cover up to ourselves. Actually, we quite often tend to be people who, and I know I can do this, is analyze everything else that's happening around us and neglect the analysis of our own heart. And yet, when we're real and honest with people in the context of deep relationships, we allow the opportunity for other people to shine the light of God's love and grace and holiness upon our lives and ask us questions. And that actually often reveals sin in our own lives. But not only are those people able to kind of ask things that draws out kind of confession of sin in our lives, they're also able to lead us to the cross where we will find mercy. You see, sometimes when we try to deal with sin in our own sense and just think, "Well, it's just fine, I'll confess with it. I'll just confess to God. Nobody else needs to know." And yet often we struggle to throw off condemnation when we do that, because we just have this voice of the enemy that just says, "Yeah, you're not really forgiven. You're not really free. You're not really this." And what we realize is we need other people to lead us to the cross. We need other people to speak the gospel truth and pray gospel truth over us. So when we're real about our sin and we're real about our weaknesses, we open ourselves up much more to other people ministering to us in the grace of God. Secondly, being real in the context of deep relationships helps us grow in dependence on God. So let's go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and just read those verses again. Verse 7 to 9, no, sorry, verse 9 to 10 says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me." When we're real, when we're weak and vulnerable before other people, we grow in our dependence upon God. We shake off that illusion of self-dependency. You know, I love what Paul says, where he says, you know, once Jesus has said to him, "My grace is sufficient for you. You know, my power is made perfect in your weakness." Paul's response to that is, "Well, in that case, I'm going to boast all the more gladly in my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me." So if you want the power of Christ to rest upon you, the way to do that is to boast in your weaknesses. If you realize that you're somebody who falls into kind of self-dependence and self-reliance, the way to kind of crucify that fleshly desire in you is to boast in your weaknesses. And as you boast in your weaknesses, the power of Christ is demonstrated, it's manifested in you more and more and more. So boasting and being real in our weaknesses helps us to grow in dependence upon God. And then finally, just as we come in for a close, being real gives hope to a broken world. So we live at the moment in a world that, in a culture that demands success, that expects success, that cultivates competition and comparison. We live in a world at the moment which is very much one strike and you're out. You know, we see it time and time again. Somebody tweeted something, you know, 10 years ago, and suddenly the tweet reemerges and they're ostracized. No longer, you know, careers fall apart because of one mistake that people made. The church should be a sanctuary from all of that. Our community is different to the world's community. And so the challenge for us, the problem for us, is if we as a people basically present as having it all together, that doesn't offer hope to a world where people are broken, where people are aware of their weaknesses, where people are constantly trying to live the Facebook, Instagram thing and present to everybody as being okay. If the church doesn't look any different, then what hope does it offer to the world? If the church, because we present in this kind of perfect way as having everything together, if we present that way, people will come amongst us and they'll think, "I can't be part of this people because they've all got it together and I'm a mess. I can't be part of this people because they're all perfect and I'm not. Or I want to be part of this people, but I got to clean up my act first so that I will fit in. And I don't think I can do that. So actually, although I'm kind of drawn to this people and though I'm drawn to this idea of this Jesus, I'm just too messed up to fit in here." And if we live our lives like that, and if we present community like that, we're actually preaching an anti-gospel. Because the gospel is not clean yourself up and come. The gospel is come and be cleaned. The gospel is come as you are, with all of your brokenness and all of your mess. Come to the one who can clean you. Come to the one who can wash you whiter than snow, because he has shed his blood for you. And so we want to be a people that says, we just come because we're cleaned, not because we're clean. We're a community who have been cleaned. But the reality is we've got mistakes and mess ups and brokenness all around. And yet God's grace is sufficient for us. So I hope that's been helpful this morning in just trying to communicate a vision of an authentic life and to encourage us to step out of our comfort zones in seeking to be real with one another. Now, obviously, that leaves us with the question of, well, how do we actually do that? And that's why I want to encourage you to come and connect in with us on Wednesday night. What we're going to be talking about on Wednesday night is our vision for what we're just calling discipleship groups. So groups of small, you know, numbers, like three or four people, that we want to encourage you to connect in with on a regular basis, where you can cultivate this life of authenticity where you can be real, you can be honest, you can be weak, you can be vulnerable, you can be accountable, and you can grow. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about exactly what that looks like and how that will work on Wednesday. So do please tune in then. But the reason I don't want to get bogged down in the practical now is because this requires a heart response from us. And so Joe is going to just kind of lead us in a song in a moment, which is really just singing about how God is our good, good Father. Because like I said towards the beginning, I think that the key to us taking our first steps into this kind of community is by us grasping afresh that we've been wonderfully and all-encompassingly accepted by God because of what Jesus has done for us. And we live out of that acceptance, not for the acceptance of others. It's transformational, and it will change us from the inside out. So over to you, Joe.